Welcome to the Infrastructure Show. I'm your host, Professor Joseph Schoffer of Northwestern University. The Infrastructure Show is designed to present to listeners the reality of America's infrastructure, its condition, why it is the way it is, and what can be done about it. We gratefully acknowledge contributions to sustain the Infrastructure Show from Dr. Robert Peskin, Dr. Raymond Ellis, and Andrea and Ron DeFeo. There's an active competition for curb space in our cities. Quick access to that space is essential for deliveries to restaurants, stores, manufacturers, and residences. The demand for delivery access has grown with the increase in online purchasing, expectations for rapid delivery, and with the proliferation of businesses and business models in the delivery industry. That same curb space is also in demand for parking and use for bicycles and scooters. To understand innovations and ways to share and allocate scarce curb space, we're talking with Anne Goodchild, who's professor of civil and environmental engineering and director of the Supply Chain Transportation and Logistics Center at the University of Washington in Seattle. Anne, I'm very happy to talk with you today.
It's a pleasure.
So give us your perspective on this competition for curb delivery space. Did I characterize it in a reasonable way?
Yeah, you did. Fundamentally, it's a scarce resource, and there's increasing demands for it, but not increasing capacity or provision of curb space. So, yeah, it's become a challenge to try for cities to decide, you know, how to understand how much is needed, and then to come up with strategies to fairly or at least strategically allocate that space to the various users. And that's been a difficult problem.
Is this really just a big city's problem?
Mm. No. I think there's a question of scale. So, sort of as a city, you know, is there higher kind of demand for infrastructure and perhaps higher utilization of infrastructure? Probably. But this problem is kind of a small, you know, it also plays out at a very small scale, sort of at the block level. And so if you have a very high demand along a single block, then you can have, you know, competition and lack of compliance and a lack of available spaces for people, even at that small scale, which occurs in communities around the country, big and small.
And is there a conflict between other curb users, the bikes and the scooters, for example?
Yeah, I think, you know, there definitely are sort of conflicts and opinions, you know, that people hold about who should have priority or who sort of deserves the space, and they play into how people react to decisions that cities have made. And, sometimes those are based on past experiences. Sometimes those are just sort of ideas that people pick up. What we're trying to do at the center is make sure that we've included data and in those decisions. And so there's actually a scarcity of information about who uses the curb and when they're there and where they're going. And so we've been trying to bring better information to that problem, so that can be part of how decisions are made. People get quite, you know, possessive of the curb. You know, you may have experienced it in your own personal life. You know, people feel like the spot's kind of in front of their apartment or in front of their house or sort of their own. And that can make change quite difficult. And so having data to inform those decisions and coming up with strategic policies or plans that could be agreed to, you know, at a strategic level before individual changes are made at the neighborhood level is something that I think can help to collectively make decisions.
So tell us a little bit more about the data and how do you collect it? I'm wondering, is it a kind of once and done, let's find out what's going on in on this particular block, or do you have the capability to monitor in near real time?
Right. Yeah, ideally we would love, as people trying to understand this problem, as researchers, to have ongoing data, because it changes, right? And moment to moment and day to day, the demand for this curb space changes, and it's dynamic. Even across seasons, people travel differently, or people use different types of vehicles, as well as over time, as, you know, the economy shifts and COVID shifts. So it is it is something we'd like to have quite detailed and long-term data collection for, but that relies on some mechanism for data collection. And we have an opportunity now in Seattle to do that with sensors we've installed in the ground, but those do cost money and somebody has to pay for those. And there's, you know, ongoing kind of costs of maintenance and interpretation as well that needs to be, those funds need to be allocated for that purpose. And there's always competition for city funds or for whoever is paying for that. So we have done some work that's been more, you know, one week or 2 weeks just to establish a baseline and to establish a certain level of understanding. When we started doing research in this space, there really was no kind of occupancy understanding. Who's there? When are they there? What kind of vehicles are they? Where are they going? And so any amount, you know, of information was really very helpful. So we have also done occupancy studies where we've put data collectors, people out on the curb, collecting data for, you know, days and weeks at a time. But that isn't something that we really want to do in the long term. In the long term, we'd like to have more kind of passive data collection mechanisms that can give us quite robust and complete data over the long term.
So what are cities doing, or what should they be doing to allocate this scarce resource of curb space in some kind of reasonable way?
Yeah, I think there's two things. One is to really make priority decisions. So, and that doesn't need to be at the whole city level, right? That can be at the block level. And I think, you know, that's open to critique. So sometimes it can be difficult to make a statement, but the city of Seattle does have a priority list for sort of what's the first use of the curb in certain, where for different types of regional land use. So in a block, you know, that's predominantly commercial or a block that's predominantly residential, there's a priority list where they indicate, you know, who they want to serve first. And I think making, you know, having an agreed upon, you know, it's not a particularly detailed plan, but some level of prioritization helps in decision making. And I think the other thing is information, because there is a scarcity of data about who's at the curb. And sometimes, you know, in place of that, we sort of take anecdotes and expand them, you know, like, oh yeah, I always see, you know, this guy parking illegally there, and our memories aren't always particularly accurate. So having data to inform that is also a really important, you know, ingredient in terms of coming up with sensible plans for allocating curb space.
So are you looking at, or are people using scheduling or booking schemes to allocate the space?
Mm-hmm. That's certainly something people talk about. And I think as we move forward and there is an increasingly available technology to measure and manage that space, I think that's something we will see people experimenting with. There's some challenges to that, and, you know, one in particular is enforcement. So if you are asking people to book spaces, how do you make sure that they're available when they get there? So, you know, we are experienced that with restaurants. You know, we make a booking, and most of the time it's available when you get there. But in order for that to happen, the restaurant has to have the table empty for a little while. So, you know, there's a loss in productivity to offer that reservation. So there's some challenges to actually implementing that and making, you know, creating a system that does balance kind of getting the most out of the infrastructure we have, but also honoring the reservations that people might make, and then figuring out how do we ensure that space is available if we are going to ask people to sort of pay and make reservations. But yes, it's definitely something that's discussed. I think we might see that in some applications first, before it's applied more broadly. It's certainly common in the private sector with, you know, warehousing and goods movement, where there is a reservation, there is quite a strict expectation for when vehicles will arrive, and those are managed, you know, by one entity and can be quite clearly communicated. It gets a little more complicated in a busy, you know, multi-objective urban space.
Yeah, you're dealing with a public space, effectively, as opposed to, for example, access to a port or rail terminal where you, one entity controls that access. So is anybody actually doing anything, or is it a matter of still that a problem that we're studying?
There are what I would say pilot studies going on. So there are tests of those kinds of systems. They are not, nobody to my knowledge has, committed to implementing that at a broad scale across the city or in the long term, but they are being experimented with. And so I expect that will help us, understand and refine those models, understand the challenges of them and refine them and help cities understand, what the implications are for them. I think there's some challenging, public policy questions about, who do you let make a reservation, and how do you allocate space up to a community when individuals get to make reservations? And again, we have other parallels in sort of public systems where they're trying to balance that. Is it a lottery, or is it first come, first serve, or do you increase the price? And what does that mean to people who have different abilities to pay? So there's definitely some challenging policy questions that I think cities will have to grapple with.
So is pricing access a serious possibility that people are looking at?
Definitely people are looking at. I don't know. I think cities are quite different in at least the ones that I deal with. There's quite a range of cities in terms of how they're thinking about this problem. And I think that there are some cities who are saying that's not something we're interested in doing, at least for the foreseeable future. And I think there's other cities that say, oh yeah, that would really help us. So I think there's quite a range.
So would you say, are you willing to say that any city is in the lead in terms of new thinking and progress in this area?
I don't know that I could say there's cities that are, if being in the lead means they're closer to implementing pricing at the curb, I couldn't say. I think cities, in my opinion, cities that are farther ahead are thinking about the implications of those decisions. So I think it's sensible to be a bit hesitant and to think through what the consequences of that might be, and have a response to those secondary effects before jumping in, because I feel like sometimes when we jump in, the train starts going down the tracks and it's harder to pull it back. So in my opinion, cities that are thinking about it, are thinking about what that means for data and what that means for sort of information systems and what that means for payment mechanisms. But also are thinking about what does that mean about access to our city and equity. And I think I would say those are the cities that are progressive. And I would certainly put Seattle in that category. That's because I work with them very closely. I'm more aware. There's probably other cities also doing that I'm less aware of. But I think they're trying to make sure that just because this technology is here and it might solve some of our problems, that we're not too quick to implement it when there might be secondary consequences that also, increase other challenges and perhaps make the city a less accessible, equitable place for everybody.
I know that you work very closely with the carriers. Do they have a position on formal allocation of curb space?
Yeah. I think there's a bit of a mix because there's very large sort of organized carriers with corporate level, policies or responses to curb management. And then there's also a lot more very small carriers who perhaps don't have the same voice or aren't organized at the same level to communicate their thinking about it. In general, I think they're quite open to solutions that would ensure they have safe and reliable places to park. It's a huge challenge for carriers, a huge expense, be that directly paying parking tickets or just the increased sort of resistance and cost of looking for parking and having to choose parking that's less convenient or less desirable, maybe not compliant with municipal code. So I think in general, they're quite open to that and open to sort of testing and participating in the experiments with how these technologies might work. I think they also, though, you know, push back on sort of making sure that that's equitable. They want there to be a sort of level playing field for all carriers, and I think they don't want to start, you know, paying for curb space if other people are somehow not paying for and still getting curb space. So they do want to, I think there's a general eagerness, but certainly also an interest in the details and how that might play out in terms of their own costs and operations.
Would seem certainly to the advantage of the carriers to collaborate on something that's going to work for everyone. And this is an interesting problem. It's one that probably a lot of us haven't looked at before, but it's real, and it's certainly to the advantage of the collaborators that you are involved and active in this as a researcher, so you can bring some objectivity and new ideas to the process. Thanks very much for spending the time talking with us about this. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, it's been fun. Thank you.
Okay. Glad to talk to you. Look forward to being in touch. Okay? Take care. Thanks.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to The Infrastructure Show. If you enjoyed the conversation as much as we did, please subscribe to our podcast and encourage your friends to join us too. The Infrastructure Show is recorded at the Studio Media Recording Company in Evanston, Illinois, under the direction of Scott Steinman, recording engineer with a commitment to great sound. Our producer is Marion Sowers, a journalist with a passion for infrastructure. And I am Professor Joseph Schoeffer. Few people are more curious about infrastructure than I am.